radical left has taken over the Democratic Party.
Hello and welcome to Think Progressively, covering politics and all the other chaos life has to offer. This is episode 79, recorded on Friday, November 11th from Milwaukee. I'm Joe.
And I'm Jason.
And on today's episode, we answer the question, what the heck happened during the midterm elections? But first, the headlines.
Up yours, woke moralists. We'll see who cancels who.
First up in headlines, let's stick right here home in Wisconsin and talk about yet more conservative book banning in Wisconsin schools.
Now, I'm glad you brought this up because I had no idea this was going on.
So this story comes out of Elmbrook, Wisconsin, where the Elmbrook School District has adopted a policy put forth by a Republican lawmaker here in Wisconsin named Jesse James, who I believe just won his reelection bid during the midterms, which of course we'll be talking a lot about, which basically stated a list of 45 books that should be banned from public libraries. They have banned, after a review of their library material, in light of this list of 45 books.
Now, before you say anything, granted, it's a little bit of a spoiler because I see the books that you're about to read off here. Without even knowing, I could have guessed, you know, 100 times out of 100, they would be all LGBTQ books.
Right.
100%.
And we're not going to read the entire list of 45, but of those 45, the library determined that they had possessed 28 of them. Of those 28 books, 9 were made more restricted and 7 were banned. So actually the majority of these books, they're not doing anything different, which is good.
Okay, yeah, so just a little bit of fascism, you know? Just a little bit of fascism.
Right. It's the tiny bit of the cancel culture that they pretend to hate so much. Because they love free speech, Joe.
Exactly.
Except for these 7 books, which were Embrace by Jessica Shervington, Perfect by Ellen Hopkins, Queer, The Ultimate LGBTQ Guide by Kathy Belge and Marky Beesh, The Infinite Moment of Us and TTYL. I think the kids say that means talk to you later.
Super topical, you know, it's like...
by Lauren Miracle.
Or is it Miracle?
You think it's Miracle?
Do you think it's Miracle and they just spelled... Really
I was trying to go for the non-stripper version of the name by saying Miracle.
Lauren, change your name.
Traffic with a K, the sequel to Tricks by Ellen Hopkins, and This Book is Gay by Juno Dawson. As, of course, you said, these are all or at least predominantly LGBT books.
Shocking.
Yeah, a surprise to absolutely no one, because we're indoctrinating kids and grooming.
Grooming and whatever it may actually end up being. But
do these people honestly think that, like, your sexuality is that fragile? That, like, you read a book and you get turned gay? I think that's how it works?
I mean, Jason, we're talking about the same group of people who thought that that's exactly what happened when people see two people or two, like, men kissing in a movie.
It turns them gay.
Yes. I mean, it sounds really stupid because it is really stupid, but that's exactly what they believe. They believe that people are getting brainwashed into being gay.
And it just shows, I think, how fragile their sexuality is.
Well, of course it is.
'Cause I wouldn't be worried about reading a book and it turning me gay.
Nope, not at all.
Because that's not how it works. Unless you're already gay and trying really, really hard to hide it.
Well, and again, we have to keep going back to the idea that they actually have absolutely no leg to stand on when it comes to arguing that these books should be banned. Not at all. The only thing they don't like is that they find LGBTQ people icky. That's literally what it is.
And Jesus doesn't like it.
Yeah, so great. I'm glad that this is what's happening in our schools now.
Let's turn to national fascism news and talk about Elon Musk.
Elon Musk. Oh, I don't want to say this. I don't want to say the headline, man. Why did you make me say the headline? Ah, Elon Musk is tanking Twitter harder than the Packers 2022 season.
So Elon Musk has about 6 losses already the season as well.
Oh, God. Elon Musk is our Aaron Rodgers. Oh, my God. No.
I'm sure they agree on a lot.
I know. That's the worst part. Ah. Sorry. You have Kirk Thuggins over there. So
Kirk O'Chains.
Yeah. Hey, at least he's producing, you know.
For now.
I
We've only had one primetime game, and we got destroyed, as expected.
Yeah, it's fine. So for many of you who have already seen, Musk took over Twitter on October 28th and immediately made some massive changes. He brought in a sink. You saw that?
Yeah.
Let that sink in a little bit. He literally brought in an entire sink just for a pun. It was great. He's a mature individual.
As of last week, he's laid off 50% of the Twitter workforce.
And it's gone as well as you expected.
According to reports, some employees were being asked to come back within hours of being laid off.
Well, yeah, because when you lay off everybody, no one knows what to do.
That can be a problem.
This goes back to the nonsense Trump argument where he's like, I'm a businessman. I do the best business. I'm the best negotiator ever. Was like the best, what does he always say he is? Deal maker? I don't know. Whatever. But it's the same garbage where Musk came in exactly with this mentality. I'm just the best, you know, thing since sliced bread when it comes to businesses. And then had absolutely no clue how to actually run this business.
Right. I saw reports that because all of their compliance people left.
Yes.
That they didn't know if they were going to be under in FTC compliance. And they are just leaving it up to the employees to try to make sure.
Yes. Well, and the same thing like with the HR, you're seeing several reports from employees saying, I didn't get anything from HR yet. I have no idea what my severance is going to be. I don't know what's going on. That's going absolutely insane.
And they tried to get rid of everyone before November 1st when their bonuses were due.
Yeah, to avoid their bonuses.
Yeah, and they were told by HR that, you know, that you're probably illegal and we would probably get sued and they had to wait.
Yeah.
Clearly doesn't know what he's doing.
No, not at all. But you know what, though?
It's certainly been interesting.
He's going to make millions off these blue check marks.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
He will make
millions and lose billions off of advertisers.
Well, you know, and that's the funny thing, too, is that advertisers are now backing away from Twitter because of other reports of spikes in, you know, hateful language and awful, like, harassment online.
Right. They had, like, what, a 30% increase in people using the N-word
the
day he took over.
What do you expect? The guy who comes in on a free speech crusade and has absolutely no idea of what hate speech is actually supposed to do or mean, of course these people are going to feel motivated to come back. That's who you got kicked off the platform. But anyway.
One of the funniest things that has come out of this, the $8 blue check mark that you can pay for those which...
Of you, hold on, we should even say it because I'm sure we have some people who have no idea
what
the blue check mark
is. Yeah, explain what it is.
So for a lot of people who don't know, and actually Facebook kind of did the same thing as well, Twitter initiated this whole program of the blue check mark next to accounts, where if you prove to Twitter you are who you are, you can, and if you're actually a person of like societal interest, it may be, you can actually get yourself verified on Twitter and show that you are the official account of representing whatever you are. That's where you always see these blue check marks.
And this became because they got sued by a bunch of people for other people impersonating them.
Exactly. So this was a way of verifying what was online to combat literally fake news. This is nothing new. Elon Musk decided to scrap that idea and say, you know what?
Like, it's a status symbol, not a verification.
It's no longer verification. It is now just a status symbol that you are just a big deal on Twitter.
And you do get some benefits, like you show up in different tabs that people can just view other verified accounts.
Yeah.
You show up first in replies, things like that. But does have some merit just beyond verification, but verification is certainly a major component.
Well, and again, imagine, because people love talking about how Twitter is the new town square, right? Now just imagine that turn into a capitalistic hellscape where those who are paying money are the ones that are getting the most attention.
Yeah, and everybody can go there 24 hours a day. You just pay $8 for a bullhorn.
Yes.
And you all just start screaming.
Yes.
At the same time.
It's insane. And of course, it hasn't gone well. As of late, a verified, quote unquote, Carrie Lake account. If you guys don't know who Carrie Lake is, she's the insane person running for governor as a Republican in Arizona. An account who spoofed her gained traction after tweeting that she conceded in the midterm race, which had to be debunked.
Which, of course, there's no way she would concede, no matter how badly she did in the election.
Which really, really tests the idea that people will fall for just about anything, you know?
One of my favorites, a Nintendo of America account that a fake verified account was spoofing, posted, and this is the day of a Nintendo Direct, like a big Nintendo Direct event was going on, so a lot of eyes were on their account to begin with, posted a picture of Mario flipping the bird. Also, some other images and like a video from Family Guy. It was not good. And Nintendo was not happy about that.
And my favorite.
Yeah, this one's good.
Was that the pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly's stock dropped after an impersonator tweeted that, quote, insulin is free now.
Yay. Now, if they had actually announced that, I'd imagine their stock would have went up instead of down. Instead, you know, we get charged 10 times more for insulin in the United States than they do in Canada, where, you know, they have reasonable laws surrounding pharmaceutical prices. Whereas, of course, we're beholden to the pharmaceutical companies like the real Eli Lilly, unfortunately. Now, I'm not saying that that's the reason their stock dropped, but it did happen the same day. I hope it is. I hope it is.
I mean, we're dumb enough to make that happen, though. Like that, I could totally see that connection being made.
Yeah, if that's what people are going to use these like $8 verification for, like parodying horrible companies and,
well, of course it's
trying to attack them.
Why? Well, what else would you do with that?
Well, that's like for good, if you ask me. Like,
I guess, but it's going to be used for evil too.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, just use it to attack horrible companies.
Yeah.
And then we'd be fine. I would have no problem. But yes, don't mess with Nintendo. Go after Eli Lilly. So, this is a new world we live in, right? Elon Musk himself has said that he is not against this practice of impersonating accounts, which was always against the Twitter terms of service. But Musk himself has come out and said he supports it, saying comedy is now legal on Twitter.
Jesus Christ.
And I think his main caveat was just as long as you could tell it was a parody account. And then, of course, multiple people, including Kathy Griffin and Ethan Klein from H3H3, impersonated Elon Musk and followed his rules, put on there as a parody, but they were, of course, permanently banned as soon as they impersonated Elon Musk, because free speech only works if you're not making Elon Musk look bad.
Yep.
And if that wasn't enough, during his first mass call with the remaining Twitter employees, which was surreptitiously recorded and has been played to multiple news outlets, Elon Musk said, "There's a massive negative cash flow, and bankruptcy is not out of the question." This is less than 2 weeks since buying Twitter for $44 billion.
Oh, Jesus. I did see someone say that Elon Musk is the Liz Truss of Twitter.
Yeah, he's either Twitter or Elon himself is not going to last as long as a head of lettuce, I don't think. He might beat her record. We won't have a 10-day mourning period here.
Stay off of Twitter, you guys. Let it sink.
Yeah, I once again deleted it from my phone.
Go to a much better platform, you know, that has no problems, like, you know, Facebook.
Mastodon, I hear that's where everyone wants to go.
That's the big one now. How about Mastodon? Not to be confused with the band.
But the dark metal band, right?
Yeah.
It's fun.
Next up, U.S. judge strikes down Biden's student debt relief plan because... Because
again, we can spend trillions of dollars bailing out corporations and the wealthy, including a high percentage of members of Congress. That's fine. They can have millions of dollars in their debt forgiven.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Well, a Trump-appointed federal judge in Texas.
That already spells like bad news.
has struck down the executive order. Of course, the decision is going to be appealed. It's already in the process of being appealed. But unfortunately, the outlook on this is not good, as who's going to have the final say in this? The conservative majority Supreme Court.
Who, by the way, four of those members just went to a Federalist convention and got massive applause for their pro-life stances.
Yeah, for overturning Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision.
Yep.
Yay! Again, if anyone is in touch with any supernatural deities, if you have a penchant for voodoo, maybe create some images of Clarence Thomas, Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett. Yeah, just saying. Again, we're not talking, you know, taking a hammer to someone's house. That is out of bounds. Just supernatural means only. Leave no trace.
So I would have to argue that the Biden administration had to have seen this coming. There's no way.
It's certainly, yeah.
Because, okay, even if they tried to say, okay, it's going to be taken to a federal judge, and that if that federal judge were to happen to actually rule in our favor,
it still would have gotten
appealed. It would still have gotten appealed. Right. And it's going to, the whole point is to send it to the Supreme Court on purpose. So they should have seen this coming anyway. So my thought process, this really does sound like an effort to, what is it, get caught trying, where
it's better than not trying.
It's better than not trying, at least. And I think, if anything, this will probably piss off a lot of people when SCOTUS shuts this down.
Will
as
well. It, though? Because this news item, when it was being challenged originally, not really that big in the news cycle. I hope it'll produce a lot of outrage, but at this point, for what? For local elections in the spring and fall? For right. You think it'll last till 2024?
Sure, absolutely not.
So, unfortunately, I do think this is going to fail, and I don't think it's really going to do a lot politically. Maybe somebody will run on it, but I don't see it being that huge, especially, I mean, we'll start talking about some of the exit polling and the demographics that we're already seeing. I don't think it's going to change that any, but I kind of, we're already in that world, so.
Well, and I do think that, like, maybe it didn't get as much traction because, one, it was a lower court, and two, there's still life for the bill. I feel like once you actually, like, full on leave it dead in the water, maybe you'll start getting more traction than after that.
Hopefully.
And
tell me about your big headline you have at the end.
Finally, here we have a new world champion.
I assume you're talking about the trash can banging Houston Astros, the cadre of cheaters.
Absolutely not. I do not care at all about the Astros. I'm talking about, according to the BBC, after 25 years, Ash Ketchum has been declared the Pokemon World Champion. That is right. History has finally been made.
Forgot how young you are.
Shut up. The epic battle played out during the Pokemon World Coronation Series Masters 8 tournament, which put champions from regions all over the world against each other.
Did Pikachu win?
You shut up. Ash's long final battle was against former world champion Leon, spanning a complete 4 episodes in a dead heat. Ash and Pikachu faced down Leon's Gigantamax Charizard after Ash lost the majority of his team, including Dragonite, Gengar, Lucario, Sirfetch, and Dracovish.
You're just making up words.
Shut up.
Those aren't things.
With Leon's healthy Cinderace and Charizard, the odds were against Ash and Pikachu, and many commentators thought that he would not be able to overcome and come out as the winner. But to fans' high hopes and relief, Ash managed to win with Pikachu on both accounts and was declared winner in a major upset in the Masters Championship.
Did he indeed catch them all?
He did not catch them all. He just won the championship.
I don't know. I thought the whole point was to catch them all.
Well, shut up. Sarah Nadocheney, the voice actor for Ash in the American version of anime, joyfully tweeted, "Yes, our boy is the very best, like no one ever was," while a number of adult fans of the show tweeted out as well that the finale made them very emotional. This
quotes
is
quotes around adult.
This no, around emotional. This is truly an historic moment in our lives. It made the BBC, it made The Guardian, it made Gizmodo. Big things are happening. As a millennial who grew up cheering for Ash throughout the ages as the boy who never aged, props to you, sir.
Did he Pokemon go to the championship?
And he Poke won it. Damn it!
Well, you're no Hillary Clinton. So you want to talk about the midterms?
Blue wave. To the main segment. Midterms. Transition.
Ahoy.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it? It's hard to get any word in with this clown.
Let's talk midterms. What the hell happened on Tuesday and Wednesday
and
Thursday
continuing.
And Friday and continuing? Still going.
I heard there was going to be a red wave. And
big red wave.
They would show Joe Biden and those damn Democrats how they screwed up the country and everybody's mad and they're not going to take it anymore.
So can I tell you, I'm going to start this off with a confession. Are you ready? Before the election, I'm not a big fan of predicting. I think predicting can make you look like an all the time, so I try not to do it. But just for fun, I tried predicting a couple of races, and I was wrong a lot. And I'm okay with that.
Oh, good thing we didn't make those predictions on this show.
Exactly. Before it happened, I predicted that Wisconsin would have elected Michaels and Johnson. I thought Herschel Walker was going to win. I was pretty confident in Florida. I was pretty confident in Arizona. I was not expecting Cortez Maso to do well at all. I was also expecting about a 30 to 40 change in the House.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually did expect a big time red wave just based on what I was looking at. And I was very wrong.
You're watching too much Tim Pool.
Apparently. So let's talk about what actually happened.
So currently, there are races to be decided. So we don't know for sure that the fate of both the House and the Senate are still up for grabs. But it looks like Republicans are likely to take control of the House, if only by a very narrow margin. But the pending Georgia runoff, once again, it looks like the Democrats will retain control of the Senate. In the House, you had Republicans gaining 16 seats, Democrats gaining 4, and 31 still to be determined. In the Senate, the Democrats gained one house. It's like you put a house on it, like a hotel, like Monopoly. In the Senate,
we do politics well.
Too much taste testing hard cider today. In the Senate, the Democrats gained 1 seat with 3 still to be determined, which is the aforementioned Georgia seat, Arizona, which looks like probably will also go to Democrats with Mark Kelly, and Nevada, which is very close, but we'll talk about that in a minute, but that could end up being an even larger net gain for Democrats. The governor races, Democrats picked up 2 in Massachusetts and Maryland, with 4 races still to be determined, Alaska, Arizona, Nevada, and Oregon. Now, historically, since World War II, the party out of power, which in this case would be the Republicans, has typically gained an average of 28 House seats and 2 Senate seats in a president's first midterm. So as you can see, the Republicans are way under those expectations right now.
Oh, yeah.
And in particular, Trump-endorsed candidates fared poorly. You had Mehmet Oz, Carrie Lake, which we don't know how that one is going to turn out yet, but so far not looking good for her. Blake Masters, again, not called, but really not looking good for him. Tim Michaels here in Wisconsin, who lost. Herschel Walker, which that will go to a runoff, but he did trail his opponent, Raphael Warnock. J.R. Majewski, who had all sorts of problems lying about his military record and lost spectacularly. And Sarah Palin, who, again, that race has not been called, but it looks exactly like it did in the special election.
Really well as a Trump-endorsed candidate? Sarah Huckabee.
Sanders,
out in Arkansas.
Well, that's Arkansas. I don't really think that one was up for grabs.
Hey, they defended abortion rights over there.
Overall, it was kind of half and half on if Trump-endorsed candidates won or lost, which is really about how it always is with Trump-endorsed candidates, unless you listen to Donald Trump, who will tell you that his endorsement is 100%, you know, rocket straight to the moon. And it's just not the case, and continues to really not be the case in these elections as well, as the most extreme candidates did not fare well. And as you have on here as well, there were a few races where the Democrats actually gave money to the more extreme Republican candidates, which seemed like a good decision in hindsight. They did take some criticism for doing so
We talked about it as well.
Right. It's a bold strategy. If you miscalculate, you're putting into office the worst people.
Right. And I...
Bolduc, I know, was one candidate.
Mastriano
as
well.
He lost. Yeah. And Mastriano
lost.
They both
did very poorly.
Right.
And so that's the thing is about that as well, is I'm kind of already over the ethical argument of like, oh, should Democrats really be doing this if, you know, we always care about, you know, fighting for democracy, but then, you know, we're boosting these crazy candidates to make sure that we can try to beat them in the general election. We have been begging the Democratic Party to actually play hardball for once in their freaking lives. I don't care.
I'm definitely Captain Hindsight on it. If you win, fine. That's great. If you lose.
Yeah. And that's a strategic argument you can make. I'm talking about the moral argument here.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
No, me neither. Like you said, if it was a really bad decision strategically, then okay, we can talk about that, how that was a really bad idea. But turns out it wasn't. It was actually a really great idea, because overall, people hate crazy people running for office.
Which is a bet that I don't know if I would have taken before this election.
I mean, to be honest, me too, man. I'm not really sure. But hey, I'm glad they did it.
There were a couple areas that really did have a red wave. One being, oddly, New York House races.
Yeah.
Where overwhelmingly and unexpectedly won by Republicans, including some seats that were thought very safe.
Well, the chair of the DCCC is gone.
Mm-hmm. And Florida, which Florida Republicans performed much better than the rest of the country, flipping 3 House seats and getting double-digit victories for both Ron DeSantis and Marco Rubio.
So,
and to tell you, I don't mean to cut you off here, but we've talked about debates a lot in the past, and it's usually a big thing. You know, when you go into the election, there was the worry about John Fetterman, yeah, and he didn't perform very well in his debate.
Correct.
Understandably with his health issues, but he beat Mehmet Oz fairly easily. And the most one-sided debate that I saw out of every single debate this year
was Val Demings and Marco Rubio.
Rubio got destroyed.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
In that debate. I have not seen any, like, professional... Marco Rubio's not dumb. And he's not as unqualified as, like, a Herschel Walker. But holy cow, was he terrible in that debate. And Val Demings was amazing. Yep. And he beat her by, like, 11, 12%.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And so, talking about the comparison between New York and Florida, only with the House, because obviously state right races aren't really subject to this. Gerrymandering. We need to understand that the reason why the red wave happened in Florida is because of gerrymandering. DeSantis gerrymandered the absolute hell out of the state, giving Republicans several more seats where they actually were supposed to be fairly competitive. The opposite happened in New York, where actually the New York Democrats actually tried to push a fairly partisan and gerrymandered map of their own to contradict or to compete with more Republican states who did their, and the New York Supreme Court, and again, you can argue this or not, swayed or decided against those maps and decided to write their own or draw their own maps. And they drew fairly competitive, straightforward districts, which gave Republicans a huge advantage in the suburbs. So there's a lot of other nuance to the New York stuff, but keep in mind that New York is what you're supposed to expect out of fair maps, as opposed to the craziness that you saw out of Florida.
So overall, what were your key takeaways from the midterms?
I had a couple of things, and I just kind of put key takeaways in here so we can just kind of discuss them. I won't talk Wisconsin yet. I have a lot of thoughts on Wisconsin since that's
we'll
the
get
one
there.
It's the one I look the most into.
Yeah, being obviously our state, we were going to talk about it.
You kind of talked about these already, but number one, candy quality actually matters. It mattered way more than I expected it to be, and I was just really kind of surprised that partisanship did not go as far as I thought, which kind of leads to my second takeaway, which is there was way more split ticket voting than I expected.
Yeah. We certainly saw a lot of it here in Wisconsin and also Georgia.
Right.
And Brian Kemp and Raphael Warnock voters.
Well, and all over the place. So for those of you who don't know, split ticket voting has been going down dramatically since, we'll say, the 2010s. And it went from I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head. Anywhere from around 30 to 40% people would split ticket sometimes to 8 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dramatic decrease. And it dramatically decreased even more in the 2016, 2018, and 2020 elections. So I had very little idea that any split ticket voting was actually going to happen. And
I cannot bring myself to vote for any Republican anymore.
Well, right. And I mean, that's the idea.
As someone who voted at least, moderately heavily Republican in the past, I cannot. I went from one of the more moderate Republican representatives with Brian Stile to Scott Fitzgerald, who's a lunatic.
Right.
So I don't have anyone that I'd even have to think about these days on even a local race. They're all crazy.
Well, let's look even at Georgia, probably the craziest one, where I could not imagine voting for Brian Kemp, who is a far right wing extremist, and then saying, you know what, I don't like Herschel Walker, I'm going to vote for the Democrat who I hate beyond belief. I cannot fathom doing that, but people did. And I am just so shocked.
I think that's somewhat Georgia is a little bit special because of the way Trump attacked the Georgia officials. True. And the way he went after the state of Georgia, I think there's, even in the Republican Party, some resentment against Trump there. And Kemp set himself up as like an anti-Trump candidate, and Herschel Walker is Trump endorsed.
But we're still seeing that kind of all over the place too. Like, we're going to talk about, but in Wisconsin, it happened. Not nearly as much, but it happened.
Well, there's...
Although the results were different.
The colors were different too.
Right. In Arizona, like, you're seeing that happening right now. In Nevada, you're seeing that happen. People are splitting their vote and voting one way for one seat and then another way for another. I don't get it, especially nowadays with how separate and sorted out the parties actually are. But
I think it shows that people don't care about policy.
No.
They just look at the candidate.
Right, exactly. Which goes back to the first point, candidate quality matters. One thing that I also kind of was interested in was the overall turnout. So as a midterm, this was one of the higher turnout elections in our history as a country. So that's a good thing overall. It was not as high as like 2018 though.
Mm.
So there were a lot of areas where lower turnout did happen. Actually, Wisconsin was one of them.
City of Milwaukee, lowest midterm turnout in a while.
Talk about it, yeah. But in Nevada, that was another big issue. That's also why Catherine Cortez Masto is struggling the way she is because of the lack of turnout in that state too. So it's very interesting. I was not expecting this, which I guess could be the other takeaway too. I have some pretty interesting ideas of what the polling. I know a lot of people hate polls, and a lot of people want to bash Nate Silver all day long. polls were relatively accurate this time around. I'm not going to deny it. They predicted Wisconsin races pretty well. They predicted Arizona fairly well. Georgia was pretty good. So sorry, Nate Silver haters. Actually wasn't too bad. In fact, if anything, polls did a good job overcorrecting to actually have a Democratic bias.
I saw a lot of the Nate Silver hate was his polling is good. His punditry, though, is awful.
Yeah, it's fine. You can hate the person. I don't care. He's a data guy. Like, they all suck. Like, no one has a good personality for this type of stuff if they're a data person. But the data does speak for itself, though. And I think another thing that people were kind of freaked out about is they saw this big doom and gloom thing. I told you I saw the same thing. And all of a sudden, it wasn't that. And I thought it was because I was assuming an error in the polls.
Well, in the,
that didn't happen.
The polling was trending in the wrong direction for the Democrats as we got closer to the election.
Yeah.
And things were looking, we're like, well, you kind of extrapolate in your head and say, well, assuming this continues to go this way by election day, you think the worst.
Yes.
So that's part of it as well. And I think a lot of the early polling ended up being more accurate than the way it was trending at the end.
Yeah. So I think those are my key takeaways. Do you have anything that you kind of took away from it?
We'll get into it a little bit more when we talk about exit polling, because I think that to me tells a little bit more of the story.
Sure.
As to what happened. And I mean, it's not like I know. I'm not out there, you know, checking to see who voted and asking them who they voted for and all that. So I'll have to rely on what's been fairly unreliable data.
Sure. I got you. By the way, you said that you're a taste testing slayer. Did you tell the people what?
Did I tell the people?
Yeah. You know, all the people that clearly listen to our show.
We are drinking some homemade hard apple cider, or just cider if you're not in the U.S.
What'd you call it?
It's called Politics Are Hard Cider.
And you know what, you guys? Actually pretty good. I'm happy with it.
Not for sale.
You can find it on our website for sale for $40 a bottle. We're not going to send you a... Well, I'll send you a bottle.
Some Angry Orchard that I put a label on if you want for $40.
I was just going to send empty bottles. But let's talk more about other things that happened in the midterms. Abortion actually did fairly well overall. California, Vermont, and Michigan all passed referendums to enshrine a constitutional right to abortion. Kentucky, you know, the liberal bastion they are, voted no on a referendum stating that there is no right to an abortion, so it's kind of like a weird double negative thing that happened. And Montana voted no to a born alive bill, which, not really that, that would criminalize healthcare providers who do not make every effort to save the life of an infant born during an attempted abortion, supposedly, or after a C-section.
So, basically a baby that has all sorts of health problems that's going to die anyway.
Yes.
The mother makes a very hard decision to terminate the pregnancy, and the law would have made the doctors try to keep that, which it would have been a failing effort anyway. And isn't the whole point, like, they talk about, oh, they can feel pain.
Yeah, they want more suffering. They want those babies to suffer, man.
Like, they are a medical professional has made the decision that child is not going to live.
I am pro-life, and life is suffering.
I feel like we could just do 100 episodes on abortion and we'll still not. We're not doctors, obviously, but the information's out there. It's not difficult. The misinformation, the purposeful misinformation around abortion and the whole, you want to just kill babies even when they're born, you know, up to and after delivery is so dishonest. And I just never see anybody push back against that.
No, I mean, the bankrolling of the misinformation is something that needs to be talked about, especially from churches and religious organizations. People need to talk about that. I have billboards all around me that talk about how the heartbeat starts after, you know, a few weeks, which is not true.
Right. Like some electrical field is present.
So we also have to understand that, but that's a different topic. We're getting off track. We'll save that for another episode.
And hopefully abortion continues to be intertwined with elections
right
for a while.
And finally, Wisconsin.
What in the world happened in our home state of Wisconsin? Start with the good. Governor Tony Evers defeated snake-headed challenger Tim Michaels.
I had a decent amount by what considers as normal in Wisconsin standards.
Right. Our elections, especially statewide elections, are generally close. We are a purple state. Our predominantly Republican rural areas and predominantly Democrat cities, and we don't have a lot of big cities, so it's not like California, but Milwaukee and Madison, and in some ways Green Bay and La Crosse, kind of hold things down.
And from what I can find, Tony Evers won by about, we'll say, 3-4% and about just under 100,000 votes.
Yeah, slightly overperforming where the polls were towards the end, but that's about what he opened.
Yes.
At against Evers, or against Michaels. Michaels, not a very good candidate.
No, not at all, apparently.
Yeah, you know, they could hit him on the, you know, he lives in Connecticut. The whole thing, all he ever talked about was Michaels Corporation,
yes,
which he did not work for even the majority of his adult life.
Well, he also had no plans. We talked about that. He clearly has no idea what he's doing.
And he had the two plans, which he couldn't actually talk about on a general stage, were to institute a flat tax and get rid of public schools.
Yes.
Not very popular on a general audience. So he can only say that in the primaries and at his rallies. And, you know, so for the general debates, all he could only just dance around and that was it. But as we said, nobody really pays attention to that. But even the messaging, when you can't put anything in there, you're not going to do very well, which actually, I think, brings us nicely into the Senate race, which unfortunately, Democrat Mandela Barnes lost to incumbent idiot Ron Johnson
by a half a point.
And I think it was a poorly run campaign on Barnes's part that cost them this race. It's a guy who started off in the polls way ahead when he won the nomination and then just saw that lead fail and fail and fail and fail. What were the things that from the Barnes campaign, so from Mandela Barnes' ads, what did you learn about him?
He likes peanut butter and jelly. He really likes wearing flannels on farms. And he's bringing jobs back to America.
I learned that his mom was a teacher and his dad worked third shift.
Yep.
That was the only ad that you saw run where he talked about absolutely nothing. And I think that was a problem.
I think so too.
And especially when you had those horrible racist ads run by the Johnson campaign and by right-wing groups.
So there was an ad like right before the election that I saw. And I don't know if it was by the Mandela Barnes campaign or not, but it was something along the lines of this overlay narration that said, "Aren't you sick and tired of being so divided by politics? Don't you wish we can just come together for once again?" Unfortunately, the people who are in government right now are making that happen. And it's just showing like Mitch McConnell, Ron Johnson, Kevin McCarthy, right? And it's like, that's why we need Mandela Barnes. He'll bring change to our government and bring change for the better. And let's get something different. Let's get Mandela Barnes. And my first thought was when I saw that ad was, holy shit. Why didn't we not have that 4 months ago before we had all of this crap about how he was a dangerous and different Democrat? If they got ahead of the racist messaging, they would have stood a much better chance because they would have already known what Mandela Barnes was already for. Yet, what actually ended up happening is they decided to put all their funding late into the campaign, which is not how you're supposed to do it, and they let the Republicans paint him into a picture.
Right. He was framed, as we talked about framing in our political advertising. He let the Johnson campaign frame who he was.
Yeah, he was a scary black guy from Milwaukee.
And really, the thing that cost him the election was the fact that people really didn't get out to vote in Milwaukee, which should have carried him in this if they'd had a turnout that was proportionate with the rest of the state.
Well,
and I think the main reason why is because what was Mandela Barnes running for? Why should they get out to elect him?
So there are a couple things I have with this. And just like I had a couple takeaways nationwide, after crunching the numbers for Wisconsin, I had two key takeaways. Number one, you were 100% correct. Milwaukee did not show up the way it is supposed to. So clearly the Barnes campaign, as well as any Democratic campaign, were banking on a much higher turnout from Milwaukee itself, and they just didn't get it. I believe Tammy Baldwin in 2018 got like 80,000 to 90,000 more votes than Mandela Barnes did in 2022. The turnout rate in 2018, I think, was like 78.5%, which is crazy for a midterm. And we dropped down to like 70 to 73% in 2022 for Milwaukee. So what that happened was, and by the way, Dane County, the Madison area, they did their job. They had a really nice turnout over there too. So what it ended up leaving was the suburbs, and where Tony Evers actually did very well in the suburbs, Mandela underperformed everywhere. And it goes back to what we talked about. The only thing I could find from these vote tolls and split tickets, a bunch of white people in the suburbs saw a scary black dude, and racism killed Mandela Barnes.
Well, and again, not running the best campaign in an area that should have been his base in Milwaukee.
Yeah. And we saw an area that he could have won, and because Tony Evers won. I still think at the end of the day, Mandela Barnes was the best candidate of what we had for options.
Yes. By far.
I do.
In the primary, yeah. Right. He was still the best. And I've heard like, oh, we'll see. They had a bad candidate here. He's not.
No. So here's the thing. If we knew what we do now, that Milwaukee wouldn't have shown up, I would argue that Sarah Gajewski, the current state treasurer, a white woman, would have done way better. I think she could have won. I think she still would have had some same struggles, and she still could have just lost as easily as Mandela did. But I think she may have stood a fairer chance because she's not black. And that's a very sad thing to say, but that's the reality of the situation we're in. I do not think Alex Krasner would have done well. Not at all. But given the information we had at the time, I would have never expected Milwaukee to not turn out. And if the black guy from Milwaukee cannot take Milwaukee to the polls, then no way would a white woman from was in the middle of Wisconsin motivate them. There's just no way. Mandela was still the best candidate. He was the best pick. You don't have to worry about and play what if. It just didn't go his way.
Well, I think they should have run a better campaign.
And they should have run a better campaign.
I liked his messaging when he was in the debates with Ron Johnson. I don't know where that messaging went when it came to advertising, which is what most people see. You know, he needed to paint Ron Johnson as a rich guy who got into politics in order to benefit himself and others like him. And that Mandela Barnes was going to be for the people of Wisconsin and actually state what he is for. They keep pushing the bail stuff. Explain what bail reform is. Explain why, yes, you are for bail reform. And who is it going to predominantly help? Who are the most incarcerated people in Wisconsin? The people in the city of Milwaukee.
Yep.
So I think had they gotten their message out, and instead of just playing defense and hanging back and just saying, well, no, I'm actually for funding the police and just trying to deflect the attacks that were against him, had he went on the offense. And we saw with a race like John Fetterman's, where they attack Dr. Oz as being an out-of-touch rich guy from out of state. You could have done the same thing with Ron Johnson. Where were the ads saying that the only thing Ron Johnson ever did to build his business is marry his wife? I saw it in the debate. Yep. It got a lot of cheers from the crowd. I never saw it in the messaging that went out to everyone who didn't watch the debate.
Yeah. And again, early messaging matters. When I'm actually doing my master's thesis right now on misinformation, how to combat misinformation. And the number one thing you can do to combat misinformation is to pre-bunk. Debunk it before it even becomes a thing. And that's what Mandela Barnes's campaign failed to do. They should have got their messaging out much sooner, earlier, and helped create the image of Mandela Barnes before the Republicans could do it for them. They didn't do that, so Republicans painted him as a scary radical liberal. I'm very upset about it, but I mean, if you want my honest take also, I'm very sad that Mandela Barnes didn't win. I'm very upset about it, but if I had to pick one of the two, I would have wanted Tony Evers to win.
Right. I mean, it is a lot more impactful to our state.
Yeah. Like, it's really sad knowing that there is a chance now that we could have a Senate or a filibuster-proof Senate, and Mandela Miguel Barnes would have been that 52nd vote, and we don't have that, but I would much rather have a working, functioning Wisconsin.
Well, as Tim Michael said, and I saw this in ads, a lot of ads, right after he said it, if he was elected governor, a Democrat would never win an election in the state of Wisconsin again.
Yep.
What he said, they put it on ads, they put it out there. I heard that Ron Johnson passed a bunch of laws in order to protect his own money and bought like a bunch of boats and things and put it in his kids' names to protect himself from taxes right before the election. I heard that on the news. I never saw that in an ad from Mandela Barnes. I never saw them attack. Ever. If even Tony Evers is more aggressive than you when you're campaigning, you're doing something wrong.
Well, and you want to hear something that's going to really make you angry? Where were the Milwaukee Democrats? You may not know this, by the way, but Milwaukee politics are absolutely screwed up. And even though Democrats run everything, there's tons of different factions of Democrats in Milwaukee. I can tell you right now, Jason.
Getting some dirt, some inside dirt.
Well, it's not even inside dirt. You can just see it for yourself. Cavalier Johnson, the Milwaukee mayor.
New Milwaukee mayor.
First black Milwaukee mayor, right? Dave Crowley, first black Milwaukee County executive, also new. Nowhere to be seen with Mandela Barnes. Nowhere. You know where they were? They're doing fundraisers for Tony Evers. They're posting about Tony Evers. They're posting about organizing for Tony Evers. They did not touch Mandela Barnes. Democrats in Milwaukee threw the former Milwaukee representative under the bus for whatever stupid reason and let Ron Johnson take the state.
So, if people want to know, how did Ron Johnson possibly get reelected in the state of Wisconsin?
Multiple reasons. Yeah. Democrats shot themselves in the foot, like we always do.
Let's talk about the rest of our state races. The one race that flipped, the heavily gerrymandered thanks to the Supreme Court, House District 3 flipped Republican. That is what includes La Crosse area, but it also stretches way out into the middle of the state to pick up enough Republicans to balance that out. And that district did go Republican.
A January 6th guy. Pretty cool.
Yay. Attorney General stays Democrat Josh Call, who that was narrowly won.
Did you see what happened? Again, this is me being a little bit nerdy. Did you see that the Republican Eric Toney conceded?
No. I have not been paying attention that much.
So the funny thing about this was I stayed up till like about 2:30 in the morning on election night.
And this is a race that was just called.
About midnight or so, the Republican candidate for AG concedes publicly. Sounds good. We check the numbers. The dude is like a half a point behind with like 5% of the vote left. He's down like 5,000 votes. And he's calling the race.
And not even in the Trump way saying that he won.
No. Like an hour later, he takes the lead. And people are losing their minds because this guy already conceded and he has a chance he could still win the election. Now, luckily, Josh Call ended up winning out anyway. But I'm like, what a crazy roller coaster that happened where the guy concedes just to lead right after he concedes. Oh.
One race that we have that is still ongoing is the Secretary of State, which is a big one because they are the ones that actually certify the elections. Currently too close to call, but 82-year-old Doug LaFollette is currently leading his Republican challenger by 0.3%. It was 0.1 when I wrote this. I guess it's changed.
Yeah, it changed.
2.3 or about 8,000 votes. He should win. There's never been a race that's been overturned via recount. Probably automatically go to a recount anyway. But as long as he stays alive, he will still be the secretary. He's been Secretary of State since before I was born.
Yeah. And I think, in my opinion, one of the best things next to Tony Evers winning was the state legislature did avoid Republican supermajority.
Right. Only thing that it even let it still matter that Tony Evers won.
Yes.
Because had they gotten that supermajority, they would have been able to override the governor's veto power, which we would be getting pretty much all of the laws that you see in Florida and Texas up here in Wisconsin. And then I would have had to move, Joe.
And for the win you may not have actually heard of. I don't know if you actually heard about this before this as well.
Yes.
Okay, good. A Waukesha County judge ordered that military absentee ballots could not be set aside from a Republican challenge. Basically put, right before our midterm election.
Which would not help the Republicans, right?
I don't know, man.
Setting aside the military ballots?
Don't they vote
Republican generally?
According to the story, Republicans sued to sequester and halt the counting of absentee ballots from specifically members of the military. The judge also denied a request from State Rep. Janelle Branchon, who pushed election conspiracies in 2020, to order the Elections Commission to withdraw its guidance to clerks about absentee ballots from members of the military. Also, apparently,
we love our troops.
Yeah. Also, apparently, as part of Branchon's insane plan, involved a Milwaukee County elections official to fraudulently request multiple military absentee ballots to send to her as proof that military absentee ballots could not be trusted and are just rife with fraud. For the record, that Milwaukee County, the reason why we know that is because the Milwaukee County elections official was found out, fired, and now faces charges of felony misconduct in office, as well as three misdemeanor accounts of election fraud.
Still being paid by the taxpayers of Wisconsin.
So that all happened literally right before our midterm elections. Woo!
Yeah, it turns out we actually can detect fraud in the electoral process.
And guess who?
Surprisingly enough.
And guess who tends to do it?
Just like that dirtbag in Racine who tried to ask for absentee ballots under names of public officials because those are names that he knew. Also caught.
Yeah.
It's stupid. And yes, who does it? The Republicans. Because they, again, they've been told by every news source that they listen to that this is what Democrats do, which is not true, is a lie. But then they try to do it too, and they realize that, yes, you will get caught, and you will face legal consequences for doing so. And that shows you that it is not widespread. It is not happening all the time. It happens a very small amount, and those people are caught and prosecuted. So don't do it.
Right. So let's now move from Wisconsin and the elections that already have happened, well, all the elections happened, but the races that have now been basically concluded, to what's still outstanding.
Outstanding.
Outstanding, I say. I'm going to kind of storm through these really quickly just to show you that actually Democrats are doing still pretty well in this midterm election. Let's start with Arizona. Democrat Mark Kelly is currently leading by 6 points with 82% counted. Also, as a heads up, there's not been officially called yet, but Dave Wasserman of the Cook Political Report has already called the race for Kelly, and usually he's right like 99% of the time. So I do think he's going to win.
Especially with what's left to count.
Right. In the governor race, Democrat Katie Hobbs narrowly leads Representative Carrie Lake, you know, the crazy conspiracy theorist.
She's nuts.
By 1.3 points.
When you stand out in this election.
I know.
As being especially nuts.
Well, did you see how she like refused to even acknowledge or say that she would even before
the election, they asked her if she would, you know, accept the results. And she basically said if she wins, she would accept the results.
On air.
And that was it. Well, I'm going to win. So when I win, I'll accept the result. But what if you lose? When I win, I'll accept the result. Okay.
You're a crazy person.
That should disqualify you immediately.
You would think, right? The good news for Hobbs, though, is that Maricopa and Pueblo counties, which will make up the majority of the votes and skew Democrat, only have 86% and 73% counted. So it should go to Katie Hobbs, although it'll be very, very close.
That's all of the drama in the Arizona elections, right?
Nope, not at all. Because for those of you who also don't know, there's been a bunch of chaos that's been going around in Arizona's election process. As of a week ago, during the early vote process, armed vigilantes who were a part of the Stop the Steal movement, dressed in tactical gear and openly carrying firearms, were standing near polling places and drop boxes. The week before Election Day, a judge had to rule that they could not be within 75 feet of these places or talk divorce because, you know, that's voter intimidation.
They were following people that were dropping off ballots, taking pictures of their license plate while having their own license plates obscured. I've seen some videos. There's a very, very brave older lady. She was an elderly woman that decided to confront. Well, yeah, I didn't mean the young part.
A spry 83-year-old.
She was. I mean, I was surprised, but she confronted the people. Like, she lifted up the flag that they had over their license plate, took pictures, and basically refused to be bullied by them, which was a good thing.
Good job, random lady. And it got so bad that police had to actually secure polling places on Election Day to make sure the armed individuals were not intimidating voters. To make matters worse, just a few hours into Election Day, Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer told reporters that about 20% of the electronic vote tabulation machines in the state's most populous county
voting machines
were malfunctioning, which caused Republican conspiracy theorists to go absolutely crazy. Of course, you know.
Of course.
Carrie
Lake. Literally exactly the same thing that I just did. That's what they did, but they mean it.
Yes.
Dominion voting machines. There they go, stealing the election again.
Again.
Yeah, it's horrible when you have to, you know, wait a little extra in line to vote. I agree. That should not ever be a thing.
Moving to Nevada. For the Senate race, Republican Adam Laxalt is currently leading Democrat Catherine Cortez Masto by less than 1 point, with 90% of the votes currently in. Most of the outstanding votes are mail-in ballots from Clark and Washoe counties, home to Las Vegas and Reno. If the trends continue, I do think Cortez Masto should win, but it will be extremely close. On top of the fact that a lot of those mail-in votes are also day-in or day-of drop-off votes, which could also potentially skew a little bit more Democratic. So we have no idea what's going to happen.
If this one goes Democrat, I think you can go ahead and call the
Senate,
the Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker runoff election now.
Right.
Because Republicans will have zero incentive to vote.
I agree. And for House races to watch. Colorado's third, Lauren Boebert's territory.
Yeah, which I think, what was it? She had a 97% chance.
A 97% chance.
Winning this election.
Is a potential pickup and a very unlikely pickup for Democrats. As of right now, Lauren Boebert is leading Democrat Adam Fish by 0.3 points, about 1,000 votes.
This is the one where a lot of people are watching just because Lauren Boebert is so especially strange. But it's been moving ever so slightly in her direction as this has gone on. She was down.
It was like 3 points, right, a little bit earlier on. It was so nice to see.
Right. But unfortunately, it looks like she is going to win.
Yeah, just by a little bit, which is very,
but
very,
you know,
sad.
For as unlikely as it was that she would lose, to be this close is a surprise, a pleasant surprise.
Exactly. In Colorado Ace, a newly created district, Democrat Yadira Caravedo leads Republican Barbara Kirkmeyer by less than 1 point, with 95% of the vote in, which would be an amazing pickup for us. Washington's third, potential pickup for Democrats as well. Democrat Marie, oh God, Glusenkamp Perez, is currently leading Republican Joe Kent, a Trump endorsee, by about 2 points, with 70% counted. Now keep in mind, the Republican who used to hold that seat was a moderate who voted to impeach Trump, so the Trump endorsed crazy person isn't really doing too well. Arizona's first, another potential pickup opportunity for Democrats. Democrat Yavin Hodge is currently leading David Schweikert by about 2 points, with 86% of the vote. In California, now we're probably not going to actually see these results for about a week or so because they're super slow in counting. That's just how their process goes. Fun fact, they actually always are this slow. We just never care. In California's 13th, Republican John Duarte is leading Democrat Adam Gray by 0.4 points with only 58% of the ballot, and it's a fantastic spot to flip this seat. California's 22nd, another pickup opportunity for Democrats, where incumbent Republican David Valadao is currently leading Democrat Rudy Sala by 8 points, with 43% of the vote in. Now, that may seem like a big lead. However, Kern County, a relatively very blue district, is only at 29% completed, which is giving it a prime opportunity to actually flip the seat.
Hopefully, all of that comes through. If it does, and Republicans like win the House by one seat,
right,
that will create a lot of problems.
Well, and again, I just want to make it very clear. Watch those races, because even though, like we said before, the data clearly shows that it's probably going to go at least a short flip towards Republicans in the House, there is still a chance that Democrats actually keep the House, which is insane. We went from potentially losing 40 seats to still potentially keeping the House. I can't believe it.
It just shows how not a red wave this was, how poorly from expectation that the Republicans are doing.
I agree.
So what do we know from the data, the exit polling? How did this happen? Why did Republicans underperform so much? How did Democrats perform better than expected?
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, first and foremost, we need to keep in mind that the most exit polling data we have immediately following elections are usually hot garbage. They don't usually mean much. More analysis is going to be needed later on, especially since we're still counting some of the races. But I'll go through what we have so far and see what kind of trends we can come up with. The first key takeaway is that women showed up. Not only did they make up the majority of the electorate, they voted for Democrats by about 5 to 8 points more than men did.
You know, we had, what, from about 150 years of women not being allowed to vote? Maybe we should try about another 100 or so of men not being allowed to vote.
I mean, if this is how it's going to go, I'm gladly doing that.
Yeah, I'll give I'll up. I'll give up my right.
I'll trade that away so fast. As far as racial demographics, though, they remained relatively the same. White voters overwhelmingly voted Republican.
Goddamn honkies.
And Black and Latino voters voted at similar rates to previous elections, at least. Concerning age, splits stayed relatively the same as well. Nothing too crazy there. Younger voters are more Democratic than older voters. Surprise, surprise. What does concern me, though, is that millennials showed only a 2-point lean toward Democrats. And I'm very disappointed in my generation.
Well, from what I saw, what the big news was the Generation Z leaning so far Democrat.
Yeah, I believe they were like 20 points Democrat.
And that was likely a big part of the difference. They didn't show up in great numbers, which...
Well, so we have to be careful with that because those were the exact takeaways from millennial turnout back when I was younger too.
Mm-hmm.
Where millennials are like, oh, we got to get the millennials engaged. They're so Democrat. They're so Democratic. We just got to get them engaged. And look what's happening. We're kind of evening ourselves out as we're getting older, which pisses me off.
Well, I believe. Still just shows you want to engage younger voters.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. And there's a reason why, because another concern I had, although unsurprising, is that over 2/3 of the midterm electorate were 45 years or older.
I'm not even there yet.
So those were both voting at similar conservative rates. So, but yeah, having 2/3 of your electorate decided by 45 years and older kind of sucks.
Eventually, all the baby boomers will die off and we might be in a slightly better place then. As long as my generation doesn't screw it up.
Continuing on, education still shows to be one of the biggest dividers among voters. Voters with a college degree supported Democrats by a 10-point margin over those without a degree. And this effect reigns true the most for white voters, where you actually had people without a degree voting significantly more for Republicans, and the second they got their college degree, they are, boom, Democrats.
Yeah, I'm a unicorn. Or do I get like an honorary degree now?
We could probably do both for you now. We now live in a socialist Biden utopia, so.
Just show me where to apply.
Yeah, right. The most important issues people cared about were the economy and inflation, followed closely by abortion. Now, this could also explain why people were more than willing to vote blue. Abortion was top of mind of a lot of people in the suburbs. Even though economy and inflation were pretty significant, there was actually a lot of data showed that actually inflation does very little to correlate to midterm elections. I don't really know how yet. I'm trying to figure that out.
It makes sense, right? So does the government have really direct control over inflation? They don't. We know they don't.
But what confuses me is that inflation and economic perceptions actually do impact voters' perceptions of the president.
Right. And Biden's approval rating is very low.
Correct. And usually when that happens, that also goes
right
or corresponds pretty well to whoever's in Congress as well. So the fact that abortion took a big leap in people's attitudes, especially after the Dobbs decision, is most likely the reason why.
Right. We know the direct result of what happens and what the government can do when it comes to abortion, right?
Yes.
What can they do when it comes to inflation? What bills are being proposed? What is the Republicans' plan to fight inflation?
Nothing. Not at all.
I think that has something to do with it.
I agree with that.
And actually, I think that's where you see that split in people that are college educated that might ask those questions versus people that just vote for the guy they want to have a beer with.
Correct. So what does this mean for 2024? Yes, we're already talking about it. And I want to say and make it very clear for everyone listening, this means very little to 2024.
Yeah, that's a long way away.
Trends have shown repeatedly that midterms have actually very little effect on the next presidential race. So do not think that, we actually did really well. Blue wave in 2024. Blue wave in 2024. That doesn't work like that. A good example is actually in 2010 when Barack Obama got destroyed.
Yeah, the Democrats got killed.
I think lost, 9 Senate seats or something like that and 60-some House seats. And he still won. So,
easily.
Right. So keep in mind, there is actually very little correlation between midterm elections and presidential elections. They are very far apart and they have different circumstances around them. Presidential elections are also much higher turnouts. So keep that in mind as well. But here's what we can infer so far. Number one, Biden will most likely run again.
Unless he dies.
Unless he...
But yes, he has said that he will run again.
The big thing he was looking at right now was how is he impacting the midterms? If he got absolutely destroyed, probably like how Barack Obama did, he probably would have been considering not running for a second term. term. The fact that this was such a historic election for Democrats probably goes without a doubt that he'll run again, and he'll probably run unopposed in the primary. Number two, DeSantis, who overperformed in Florida, now has a much better reason to run for president. Now, don't get me too crazy. There's a lot of news media about it, how, oh, DeSantis is the best person ever. Oh my God, he's so good. That's from people still thinking for some reason that Florida is a swing state. I don't know why, because it's not.
Yeah, it has not been for
a while. No, it's not. He won a red state fairly easy, just like Greg Abbott won Texas, and just like Brian Kemp won Georgia. But someone who also took this very personally with all his positive news about DeSantis was Donald Trump, who has already started attacking Ron DeSantis, DeSantimonious.
DeSantimonious, his new nickname.
In a statement released right after the election, Trump said, News Corp, which is Fox, The Wall Street Journal, and the no longer great New York Post.
Never really great, let's be honest.
Well, and the reason why he's also now bashing the New York Post is because of two different cover stories that they ran. One was, it was like a super pro DeSantis thing. I can't remember what it was, DeSantis run now or something. I can't remember what it was. It was something stupid. It was a pro DeSantis one. And then the
Santa Claus is coming to town.
Sure. And the second one was about Trump calling Trump Trumpty Humpty, had a big fall.
Yeah, I saw that one.
So now he's upset with the New York Post because, he has the temperament of a four-year-old. Is all in for Governor Ron DeSantimonious. Then he continued on by claiming that he sent the FBI in to help Ron DeSantis in 2018 by stopping the ballot theft. I'm not kidding.
I thought he hated the FBI. Now he's all in on the deep state. What's going on here?
And even more so.
Yeah, just more lies. It's just, this guy.
He's a crazy person.
He was president for 4 years. I don't know. All he ever does is lie and just make up everything.
Yep.
And it's so obvious.
Yep. Even more so. Get ready. Because Trump also sent out an email to reporters inviting them to Mar-a-Lago next Tuesday for a special announcement.
Yeah, I wonder what that's going to be.
And for all and we know.
What's going on here? There was the hurricane that hit Florida. He stayed in Mar-a-Lago, didn't die. I'm already an atheist, but if you wanted proof there is no God.
So for all we know, the fight for 2024 begins next week.
And I know a lot of Republicans don't want him to announce right now because they have the runoff election and they don't want Raphael Warnock to get that boost of, again, especially in Georgia, like we talked about, Trump's not exactly popular there.
Nope, but there's several reasons why he wants to do so. Number one, he wants to get out in front of Ron DeSantis because he actually is legitimately scared of him. And number two, he's trying to convolute the whole indictment thing from the FBI that happened a couple weeks ago.
Because now that the midterms are over, they lose that disincentive to go after Trump because they were waiting. And so now, up until the point where he declares, that could be the time when they finally go after him over the January 6th stuff, which they've already had multiple people testify that the only reason they were there was because Donald Trump told them to.
Correct.
That Donald Trump told them that the election was stolen and they needed to fight to keep him in office.
So get ready, you guys. We just finished the midterms and we're already in the next campaign season.
Yep. Yeah. The ads will go away hopefully soon. I still see ads, even though we're past the election.
Well, because we've got the runoff now. I'm still getting emails and texts from Raphael Warnock.
But I mean, I'm still seeing political ads for people whose races are decided.
Oh, yeah.
At this point. So hopefully those will end soon. All those buyouts will expire. And we'll at least get a brief respite before all of that starts over again.
And those are our midterms.
So, Joe, I showed you before the show, we had our biggest week ever in the history of our podcast, our biggest month ever, last month of downloads.
It's pretty crazy, right?
So you know what that means.
We take a break.
Yeah, let's go on break. there is going to be a little bit of a layoff here, barring the Warnock-Walker race. And I'll just say it now, Warnock's going to win, right?
Ooh, bold prediction.
I'm saying it.
Oh, snap. Now it's going to go badly.
Maybe we'll check in. We'll see how it goes. But at the very least, we'll probably do the same thing we did last year, break for the winter, all the holidays, things like that. Just easier on the both of us to not have to meet every week while going through all of those other things.
He can't stand me, you guys.
But I do want to get back, at least before the election that we have here in Wisconsin in the beginning of April, where we will decide the future of the state Supreme Court. It's currently one vote leaning conservative, and there is going to be one conservative justice up for re-election in April, where we can flip it back to sanity.
Yep.
So if you don't hear from us before then, we'll wish you all whatever solstice, holiday, Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever, Kwanzaa, Saturnalia, whichever festival you prefer, of the death and rebirth of nature, however you want to go about that.
And a happy new year.
And we'll see you all soon enough.
Thank you for listening. We hope to see you in the next episode. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at ThinkProPod. You can email us at thinkpropod@gmail.com. And remember, when in doubt, think progressively.
The Elmbrook, where the Elmbrook School District.
The Elmbrook?
Elmbrook, because they're banning books.
In this midterm erection. Nope.
Erection?
Yep, I said it. I knew I said it. I'm going to kind of.
Joe's got a midterm erection right now.
And there's your title.